And I offered, I said, okay, I will drive you in the evening. I'll come here, I'll sit and wait for her until she finishes classes, and I bring her back home. The husband said, no, she can't.
Welcome to Immigrants Wake America. This is a podcast where storytellers share their family histories and the centrality of women in their life stories. I am Lily.
And I am Shruti Jain. Today's episode is a special one. The conversation will be facilitated by Dr. Lisa Yan, Associate Professor in the Departments of English and Asian American Studies, Binghamton University. Our guest today is Goretti Mugamva. We hand over the space to Dr. Yan and Goretti.
Hi, I'm Lisa Yan, and I'm really happy to be here and happy to interview Goretti Mugamva. She is originally from Uganda and settled here in upstate New York. She is a case manager for immigrants, refugees, and asylees who are settling in this area. So I'm excited to hear about her experience and also about her own journey to the U.S. So Goretti, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be part of your project.
How about the cases that you're working with here at the American Civic Association in Binghamton as an immigrant case manager? What are some of the incoming cases?
Yeah, you know, previously I was a refugee case manager. That's when we were resettling so many refugees from different parts of the world. But currently, that program stopped. But when there was problems in Afghanistan, we tried to help the churches that were resettling them because the churches could do it directly. So currently, there are some families from Afghanistan coming through the churches who sponsored them that we are being part of and helping. Though they haven't come yet, I think we received only one family so far. Right now, we are still waiting for the clearance from the immigration department.
I really admire the important work that you all do here at the Civic Association, and especially you. You've been doing this work for many, many years.
Yeah, I've been doing this work for 10 years now, almost 11.
And I know many people come to seek the services here. It's a lifeline for them. They come for the English classes. I know numbers of people come to get assistance for their families. What are some of the, I wonder if you could share some of your past experiences, perhaps starting with your early work with refugees.
Yeah, so my early work with refugees, as I told you, they are from Iraq, some from Russia, actually. I mean, some of the Ukrainian refugees came from Russia, some from Burmese. So the first thing they do is to try and learn English. So immediately they come, we have to register them in English classes, which are offered here at American Civic Association. And of course, it's a struggle. Then there's a struggle in the family who goes to the classes because it's husband, wife, and children, of course, are registered in to go to school. And it's up to the husband and wife to decide who comes to classes. But some of the families, through their culture, they didn't want their wives to come to classes at all. They have to be accompanied by a male, or they just don't allow them to come to classes. So it was a struggle. The women really, really are very good. They know they learn so fast. Some of them would come with, both husband and wife, especially when they have kids, all of them are going to school. But if they have little kids, of course, the whole load comes to the woman to stay in home and take care of the children. One family in particular, I remember very well, I asked them, I offered them, because the woman was really bright. She was a teacher in her country. And I offered, I said, okay, I will drive you in the evening. I'll come here, I'll sit and wait for her until she finishes classes, and I bring her back home. The husband said, no, she can't. I have to be there. Then another one said, well, if he goes to class, my son has to be there with her. And of course, the son is a young teenage man, young man. And, it was, so she decided, said, I'm not going, don't worry, my husband doesn't want me to do it. So she never came to classes.
So there are a lot of challenges for them and also for you in your assisting
yes.
them and helping them to settle. And I'm I am very curious about what you mentioned about the particular situation or challenges for the women who are selling here, for example, trying to get English classes and also at the same time bearing the heavy load of being primary caregivers for their families. What are some of the other challenges? If we could continue to talk about your experiences with women in particular, what are some of the other challenges that you faced?
The other challenge we faced, like most of the families actually, and I mean, the women had reached a point where maybe they don't want more children. And they said, I've had enough. And they see the struggles here. I mean, when they come to America, the culture is quite different because at home, they have support. Children have someone, a relative who will come and take care of the children and, for her to do other things. But here, they are just on their own, they're just in the house there with the children and the husband, So some of them don't want to have more children, but the husband will not lift a hand, said, they want more and more children. So one lady in particular, she told me that she doesn't want to have another child. If I have another child, I'm going to die. So I said, okay. So she came here with her daughter who had now, was in school. And so we were translating through the phone. I say this, she taps it in, and then she understands what I'm talking about. And she was really serious. She didn't want more children. So I took her to family planning and I said, so if they give you contraceptives, how are you going to take them? How are you going to say, now, don't worry, I'm going to hide some of them and you can keep some of them here for me. I'll come for them. So that's how we did it.
What you just shared with us is such an eye-opener. I can't imagine that people who don't do this kind of work would even, think of some of the experiences you've just shared. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you could tell us about, or I would like to know, what happens when these families first arrive to, when they get to, let's say, the airport?
So when these families arrive, first of all, we are given the arrival dates. We are, these things come from Washington, the central office in Washington. And then they send us that, first of all, we accept resettling these families in the community. So then they send us all the bio, they are everything. Then we have to look for a housing for them. So we have to find an apartment or a house, and then we have to furnish those apartments. The money the government gives you is very little. If you use it all, the family won't have anything. So we tried our own best to find, we found some, we go in the community, find some people who kind people who offers furniture, who offers things, free things. Of course, we're looking for free things. Just furnishing a house so that, like an apartment ready to move in when they come here. And then they have to go shopping, buy bed sheets, buy towels, by supplies, when they come to the house, they have to have food ready, culture appropriate food. If you are from Ukraine, we have to find out what the Ukrainians eat. And we have to find some people in the community if they can help us prepare that meal. Or if they are from Iraq, we have to find Iraqis who can help us prepare this meal. The meal has to be their own cultural meal. So we go to I used to go to the airport myself, sometimes alone, sometimes with a colleague. But whatever time the plane comes, I have to be at the airport to meet them. So if they have an anchor here, a family that is helping them, I go with that family member. We go to the airport. That helps a lot if they have family members because the language, no one speaks English with them. Few words here and there, but, So we go to the airport. We pick the family. I remember picking the family at around 2 a.m. and it was snowing. So they come here, you take them in, you take their papers, and then you drive them to the family or to the house where they are going. You sit down with them to make sure they have eaten, and you have to eat the food with them. So we sit down, we eat the meal, we leave them there. The following day, we have to bring them back to American Civic to do registration, to take them to Department of Social Services, to know the children, to register school children in school, all that work.
I'm really inspired by hearing your stories, Gritty. and I admire your commitment. You're really the face, you know, and the many others who are part of this community who reach out and support, you know, newcomers. You're the face of our community, and I'm just want to tell you how much I admire it.
Thank you.
I also want to take the opportunity to ask you about your own journey. So I imagine your past also informs your decision to go into this kind of work.
Yeah. So, you know, when I came through it, you know, through different countries. When I started, I was alone. I didn't have responsibilities, but I just wanted to run away from my country. I hated my country. As you know, I still do. I love my people. I love the family members. I love the, you know, the culture. I love everything about my country, but I don't like my country because of what our politicians have done to this country for a long, long time. So, but anyway, I left. The reason I left was my brother-in-law was shot and killed in front of my sister and her three children. My brother-in-law was a dentist, a doctor, and he had had a meeting with the government people and told them, I said, you know, how can you want, because they were talking about protecting doctors, because doctors were being killed in my country at that time. So he told them, said, how can you protect doctors when doctor, you don't protect the people we want to treat? I said, the first obligation for you people is to protect the people. They didn't like that. So the informants in the meeting went and told the bosses, and that night they came to his house, dismantled his car. The phone was, you know, they took off the wires, entered the house, and shot him in the hip, you know, the joint, where he couldn't stop bleeding, even if they tried to stop bleeding. So my niece was about eight. So she was trying to count how many people were in the house, and they shot her too. They shot her in the leg and they left. So my sister was crying and of course tried to use the phone. They couldn't use the phone, had to walk and reach somewhere, get someone to help her, call a brother who was far away to come and take them to hospital. Actually, he died at the gate of the hospital where he worked. And I was so, and you know, I had that hatred. I said, you know, this country is, you know. So I told my sister, I'm leaving. I said, you know, I'm going, I don't know where I'm going, but I don't want to live here anymore. So I left Uganda, I went to Kenya, stayed there suffering. Kenya was not an easy country to live in too, though it was my next door neighbor. Then from there I left, I went to Nigeria. I worked in Nigeria, I went to Nigeria, you know, worked there at the university as a secretary. And the meanwhile, you know, you work on contract, the contract finishes, they don't want to renew it. I don't want to go to Uganda. Where do I go next? And during that time, I had a child, I got a baby, and here I was. But I had friends who are from Rwanda, and they were experienced with refugees and how to immigrate, how to apply for things, how to. So they told me, said, you should apply to go to Canada. I said, how do I do this? So they told me what to do, but they left and went to Canada and left me in Nigeria. And then, as God will have it, one day, I used to work for the bus of the university. And one time, there was an ambassador who came to the university from Canadian embassy. And this, I had talked to friends whom I told them, I said, I want to leave, I want to go to Canada. I said, the ambassador is coming, you should go and meet him. Maybe he can do something. So I went and met the ambassador. So I met him, I shook his hand, and I said, you know, I'm interested in immigrating to Canada. I said, you why? He said, okay, this is my phone number, this is my card. So after that, the rest is history. I got, he went back to the embassy in Lagos. Within a month, I heard from him and said, you know, application has been approved. You need to come to register in the embassy, you know, that process. So we went with my daughter, she was about two. We went to the embassy, or registered. It goes on and on for like 6 months or so. But, you know, all my focus was, okay, what life is it for my daughter? Where do I take this kid to grow? I don't want her to take her to Uganda. I don't want to stay in Nigeria. Where am I going to take this daughter of mine? So we left Nigeria. We went and resettled in Canada. Canada was a heaven for me. I love Canada very much. But it's a struggle too. You're a single parent. You want to go to school. You want to do this. You want to do that. I couldn't do those things because I couldn't leave my daughter alone in the house. Anyway, I had friends from Kenya who was a professor at BU. And he knew my dreams. He knew that I wanted to go back to school. This I had met him in Nigeria. So I explained to him, I said, he said, well, if you apply to the university and you're accepted, you can come and live with us, with myself, my wife, and his wife is my friend too. Said you can live with us and, you know, as long as you can pay your school fees, you know, your tuition. So I applied to BU, I was accepted. And then I worked on campus. I had two jobs actually on campus. I had three jobs during summer. I worked in the print shop. I painted dorms. Some of those Binghamton University dorms, I painted them. And I had that job. I had three jobs, and then I worked in professor's office. So that's how I managed to pay my tuition at BU. Then at the same time, supporting my daughter because she was in, at that age, she needs nice clothes, nice shoes, nice this and that. But, you know, you sacrifice everything. You said, well, I've worn enough clothes. You know, I don't need more clothes. What I have is enough as long as she's happy. She's, you know. So that's how I came to Binghamton. And then my daughter went to Howard after high school. She did. And I'm proud to say she's now a doctor and Lisa knows her. So that was my journey here. I'm still here in America because my daughter wanted to live here. We came, our plan was, I finish school, we go back to Canada. But it didn't work that way. She said, I have made friends here. I don't want to go to Canada anymore. I want to live here. I said, well, I'm just the life for you. You want to live here, you live here. I'll stay with you. So
your daughter, Maria,
yes.
She's a doctor, and I know she has been on the front lines during COVID.
Yes.
Really, really incredible, important work that she's doing. And you also continue to work and support people through this time.
Yeah.
Have you passed on or shared any of your Ugandan cultural practices with her?
Oh yeah. You know, I mean, I said I don't like my country, but I like my culture. Culture is very important to me. So in my culture, you know, when you are born, you are given a name and you are given a pet name. So we have pet names, and there are 12 pet names. I have, and they, you know, my pet name is Akiki, and there might be another Akiki there. But in my household, I'm the little Akiki because a grown-up, you know, is more, you know, we respect people because of their age. We don't go back, you know, and we don't call them by name. We call them by pet names. You can't call, my daughter can't come and say, hey, Aunt Lisa. No. Aunt Lisa has to have a pet name. Which when you call her, Auntie Akiki, Auntie Awoli, Auntie Amoti, you know, and then you do it in such a way that you have to bend down a little bit and they have to touch you or they have to acknowledge you. And anybody who walks in the door, you have to know their pet name. If you don't know, you just ask in whispers, what's her pet name? Oh, is that Awoli? Is that Akiki? So because you don't want them, you don't know my pet name, you know. No, you don't want to be disrespectful. So my daughter has a pet name. Her pet name is Atwoki. And that really makes her so proud, makes her feel that, yeah, I'm a Ugandan, you know, I have a pet name. You know, that's what I can talk about, pet names. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I know just how much you have dedicated to Broome County and also the fact that you have another job too, besides being an immigration caseworker here. What is that?
So, you know, So when I got a master's in social work, but during that time, I was working as a part-time working with people who are, you know, people with developmental challenges, developmental difficulties. So I was working there at night and got school during the day. So after I finished my master's degree, then one of the managers there asked me, said, why don't you apply here for a permanent job, Yon, as a social worker? And said, really? Say, yeah. So I applied there. I got a job as a behavior specialist and full-time, that's 5 days a week, and with, you know, benefits. Then a friend of mine, Andrew, he had offered me a job here. He said, you know, we are going to resettle refugees. Would you? No, I was looking for a second job because I have student loans. I have, you know, expenses to pay for. So that work which I'm doing now, even now, is not enough for me to pay my student loans, support my daughter, do all kinds of things. So, you know, sorry to say, but jobs in social work, they don't pay a lot. They pay very little. So I work with people who are mentally handicapped, mentally disabled, and I like it, really. It's challenging. I write their programs and they supervise houses. They live in group homes. I support them in every way I can. And that's my first job. And this, I call this my first job too. They are all my first jobs. I love them. Yeah.
Gritty, you touched so many lives. I don't know if I could keep up with you. I don't think I could. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your time. I'm just so glad that you were willing to share your experience. And also, I appreciate very much you sharing a bit about your own journey and how you left your country and eventually, as a single mother, remigrated multiple times and arrived here. So thank you, Gritty. And I guess we'll talk again, right?
Yeah, I really want to thank you for having this interest in refugees and immigrants, because, you know, most of us are immigrants and refugees. People don't understand their stories. They don't understand our stories. They think it's just a name. It's, you know, there's a person behind, you know, these names and whatever. But I'm so glad you have taken this interest, and I thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you to all the listeners. Thank you.